When Sarah Imenu died, Abraham came to eulogize her and to cry over her. Vayavo Abraham lispod l'sarah v'livkosa. And the letter kaf in livkosa, to cry over her, is small. Chazal say that the crying was, in his case, and should be minimized. And Chazal tell us that in Shiva, the 7 days of mourning, central days of mourning, the first 3 days are for crying. The last 4 days are for continuing hesped, eulogies. Eulogies start from the beginning, but they can continue. Whereas the crying should stop after 3 days. But as a matter of fact, in Shulchan Aruch it says, one of the purposes of hesped is to make people cry. The eulogy should generate tears. So it seems that crying is part of the idea of hesped. Why then would crying stop after 3 days when hesped continues for another 4 days? Why is crying limited? We know that there is a mitzvah of yibum. A man who dies without children, preferably at one time, his wife should marry the dead man's brother so as to try to have a son. That son will carry on the neshama of the one who died. Of course, that's only if the man died without children. If he had children, yibum was not performed. But now, how do children help? A man has a family, he has children. While he's having children, he has his own neshama. His own neshama is by him. Those children are born, they have their own neshamos, their own souls, separately. So when he dies, why isn't there still a problem? What's going to happen to his neshama? He's leaving the world. His neshama is leaving the world. Where does it have any expression? So what if he has children? And one of the explanations is that his neshama, aspects, dimensions of his neshama can be acquired by his children when he dies. And those elements of neshama live on through his children. Then children can receive new elements of neshama when the father dies. Which means that the father's presence in the world is not totally lost. It's not totally lost. There's an element that the children carry that represent the father in the world, even though the father as a person is gone. Chazal ask, hesped, eulogy, for whom, for whose honor is the hesped? Yakud achayu, yakud eshichvi. Is it in honor of those who are alive, explaining the greatness of their yichus, of their family forebears? Or is it in honor of the dead? And the Gemara paskins that it's in honor of the dead. The eulogy is to extol the person who's gone on, to say what we've lost, what we've lost, what we're missing. Crying is also an expression of what we've lost. You cry because you're lost. But the crying has to be limited, because it isn't totally lost. The Yorshim, the Avelim, the children who are left behind, can perpetuate elements of the Father's soul in their lives. And that, I think, is the pnimius, the inner explanation of what is often said at a hesped, that the midos tovos, the good characteristics of the person who went on, are available. They're available principally to the children, but also to others who want to realize them, dedicate themselves to those midos, to those characteristics, and carry them with them, and thereby represent the person who's passed in the world. So limiting our crying is an expression of the idea that not all has been lost. And the same is true in crying over the Beis HaMikdash. The same double attitude, the same double approach of hesped, expressing the glory of the Beis HaMikdash, which we don't have, on the one hand, and on the other hand, recognizing what still exists, what continuation still lives with us. That double dimension is crucial in understanding how to relate to the Churban and how to practice the art of Avelus. I heard this idea from my Rebbe Zatzal, the Boston Rebbe. He pointed out that with respect to the Beis HaMikdash, we have two phrases in Chazal, and later literature, two phrases that we use and we don't often think of the distinction between them. One is Zeche L'Churban, remembering the destruction, and the other is Zeche L'Mikdash, remembering the temple, the holy Mikdash. And these two phrases express themselves in Halacha and in Minhag in different ways. Zeche L'Churban, as everyone knows, you put ashes on the forehead of a chassan before he goes to the chuppah to get married, and you break a glass at the wedding, and many people leave a section of wall in their homes unfinished. And the ta'anesim, the days of fasting, and the 3 weeks that have come to a culmination today, all of that is zeichel l'churban. But at the Passover Seder, we have zeichel l'mikdash kehillel. Just as Hillel ate his matzah, Pesach and Moror together in a sandwich, so we too do what Hillel did. Is that an element of mourning at the Seder? Not at all. Not at all. We take a lulav and esrog 7 days in the whole world. The halacha and the rice is only in the Beis HaMikdash. Only in the temple was it 7 days. In the rest of the world, the Torah only said to take it the first day. Does that mean that there's an element of mourning on Sukkot when we take the lulav? Chas v'sholom. Chas v'sholom. Zeichel HaMikdash means that the Mikdash still lives. As Rabbi Breider was so beautifully explained it in his previous year, beautifully. It still lives. There are elements, a ruach, a spiritual reality that still lives with us, and we can access it, we can relate to it, we can express it, realize it, and be inspired by it. So we do at the Passover Seder what Hillel did. And we take the lulav and esrog, which required the kana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, because he's extending what happened in the temple to the rest of the world. And some say that counting Sfiras HaOmer Bezman HaZeh is only Midrabanan. Because there's no Omer. So what are you counting? But the Rabbanan did it, Zeichel HaMikdash. They counted in their times when the temple stood as a mitzvah deraisa, biblical commandment. So we're doing it also in memory of that. That's not mourning. That's acting out the remnant of the Beis HaMikdash that still lives with us. That still exists. So it behooves us to meditate a little. What did we lose and what remains of what we lost so that we can realize the potential of what we still have? Of course, we lost the korbanos. We lost the sacrifices. To many people, not only official Baalei Tshuva, but the Baalei Tshuva that we all should be. To many people, the loss of the sacrifices today, I think, is zero. It's zero. We have no appreciation of what's lost. We never experienced it for 1900 years. But at least externally, we could learn what it is we're missing. The word korban means to draw close. Lekarev means to draw close. The offerings in the temple were a unique means by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu made himself available to us and gave us the opportunity to draw close to him and to connect to him. Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato says in the Derech Hashem, service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu means turning to him and desiring to draw close lehiskarev ladov kabo and attach ourselves to him. That formula carries enormous meaning. First of all, the first step in serving Hashem is to turn to him. Why must I turn to him? Because I'm facing in the wrong direction. That's why. Otherwise, I wouldn't have to turn to him. We are naturally faced in the wrong direction. Every gesture of service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires a paniya, pone elav, turn to him. And then to desire to draw close. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I gave you closeness. It's called korban. The word means closeness, drawing close. And although I used it a moment ago, perhaps I should be more careful in my speech, the English word sacrifice has no relationship to korban at all. The English word sacrifice means you're losing. You're giving something up. You're being deprived. The act of korban is the exact opposite. It's the greatest possible gift. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us that ability to be connected to him. And that's why the pasuk says, v'yikchu li truma. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu solicits donations for the tabernacle, it says, take for me an offering, take for me. Weren't we giving it? Why is the verb to take used? Say the Mephoshim, because although you are contributing gold and silver and tapestries, you're getting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. That's worth far more than the gold and silver and tapestries. So in this transaction, you are the big winner, not a loser. You're not sacrificing anything. The very word sacrifice carries with it a mental approach, which is the opposite of the reality. Offering is a better word. Mincha is another word that's used for what was presented in the Beis Hamikdash, which means offering. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm making myself available. The Shekhinah was Shkuya, the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was visible, manifest. 10 miracles took place on a continuous basis, says the Mishnah in the Bais Rishon. Anyone who went to the Beis Hamikdash could see those miracles. This is what we lost. But we lost much more. The Belzer Rebbe, I heard him say this in 1977, Belzer Rebbe pointed out that a court of 23, a Jewish court of 23, can try capital cases, dinei nefashos. But that's only when the Sanhedrin is located in the Lishkas Hagozis, its chamber on Har Habayis, next to the temple. When the Sanhedrin went into Golis, due to the Roman persecutions, when the Sanhedrin went into Golis, no longer could any Jewish court anywhere in the world try a capital case. Why not? Because the Sanhedrin sitting in the Lishkas Hagozis meant that there was a flow of Torah coming to the Jewish people through the temple. And only with that flow intact could a Jewish court take the responsibility to perhaps end the life of a Jew. When that connection was severed, when the Sanhedrin went into Golis, no longer could a Jewish court take responsibility for deciding that a Jew should die. So the temple was also a flow of Torah into the world. Not just a place where we presented the korbanos, But also, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through his connection to us, gave us the benefit of that kind of insight into Torah, which could be used without restriction. And also, though this is not well known, but it's Mufurash, that the Beis HaMikdash was the center of prayer, of tefillah. If you take a look at Shlomo HaMelech's dedication of the Beis HaMikdash that he built, in Sefer Melachim Aleph, Prokim, Hey, Vav, Zion, a long, long speech of dedication. The only activity associated with the Beis HaMikdash is tefillah, prayer. If all you had to go on was that dedication, you would not know that there were offerings, animal offerings there. You wouldn't know that that was carried out there. He says over and over again, Jews will pray here, or they'll pray elsewhere, and think of their prayers going to the Beis HaMikdash, to go to Shamayim, says Shara Shamayim, said Yaakov Avinu. Or Lavdil non-Jews. Non-Jews will pray. They'll pray there, or they'll pray to that place. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tishma Min HaShamayim, hear them from heaven and answer them. The Beis HaMikdash is a center for the idea of tefillah. And this is epitomized in a famous pasuk in Yeshaya. V'havi osim alai kodshi v'si machtim b'beis tefillah si odosehem v'zivchehem l'ratzon al mizbechi ki b'si b'is tefillah yikare l'chol ha'amim. I'll bring them to my holy mountain and I will cause them to rejoice in my house of prayer, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Their sacrifices, their offerings will be pleasing on the altar because my house will be called a house of prayer for all the peoples. Twice in the verse, the title of the Beis HaMikdash is house of prayer. In the middle it says, yes, animals will be offered there, but the title is house of prayer. And that means that when Chazal set up a systematic correspondence between tefillah and korbanos, prayer and sacrifices, they weren't inventing anything. This was on record hundreds of years before in Solomon's dedication and Yeshaya's verse. They were simply carrying out that ancient theme in concrete legal steps. And the legal steps they took were not to use prayer to replace the lost Beis HaMikdash. That's a historical mistake and a philosophical mistake. The people who instituted the correspondence between prayer and sacrifices were the men of the Great Assembly at the beginning of Bayis Sheni. And the prayer and the korbanos were side by side for 400 years. And the word in the Gemara, which I've now cited three times, is Philos Keneged Korbanos Tiknum. They set up the prayers corresponding to the sacrifices, not in place of the sacrifices, in spite of the fact that in the Shulchan Aruch it says Bimkom, but the Gemara says Keneged. They were set up to correspond to one another. Because the vision is that prayer and offerings form a unit. They form a unit of offering ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through our representatives, the Kohanim and the Beis HaMikdash, through the animal and plant and mineral world, Nisuch HaMayim, and offering ourselves spiritually to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's one national coordinated effort of offering to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so with the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, a key link in prayer was lost as well. So the Beis HaMikdash represented korbanos, the offerings that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us as a means to connect, and prayer in which we speak to Him, and Torah in which He speaks to us. And this idea of Torah and prayer as a dialogue should be taken very seriously. The Gemara in Brachos says that there are times when HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings on people Yisurim Shalahava, suffering out of love. The Rishonim have a variety of opinions what that means. Rashi on the spot says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will cause a person to suffer to increase his reward in the world to come. The Gemara says, if the suffering interfere with your ability to learn Torah, it's not Yisurim Shel Ahava. Or if the suffering interferes with their ability to daven, it's not Yisurim Shel Ahava. If the suffering interferes with these two mitzvos, it doesn't come into the category of sufferings brought out of love. We could easily imagine why. If the suffering disturbs your ability to learn Torah, learning Torah is the lifeblood of Jewish living. It's the lifeblood of the neshama. But if I had to pick a second mitzvah whose disturbance would be a criterion for it not being Yisurim Shel Ahava, would we pick prayer? Maybe we'd pick Shabbos. Or kashrus, because when you eat non-kosher foods, it causes a spiritual deadening. Or any other mitzvah. But the reason is because prayer and study of Torah are two halves of a dialogue. In prayer we speak to Him, and in Torah He's speaking to us. And it's not an accident when you open a sefer that you're learning that sefer right now. If you have to ask yourself, why am I learning this sefer now? And you think of all the circumstances. I joined that yeshiva and that yeshiva. That's what they're learning. Or my Rebbe told me that I should be learning this. Or I made a mistake in Shabbos last week and I know I'll have to review Hilchos Shabbos. It's Hashgacha Pratis, a Kodesh Baruch Hu's private providence for every individual, that he should be learning this page and these words at this moment. Which means that it's a communication from a Kodesh Baruch Hu to us. It's two halves of a dialogue. And indeed, that's one reason why someone like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Shetarasu Menoso, who was totally dedicated to Torah, didn't daven. Because when he's talking, we don't interrupt. It's a much higher connection that we should hear him speak than that we should talk to him. So it means that the Beis HaMikdash, which we think of as the place of korbanos, and korbanos are how you draw close to Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Beis HaMikdash is central to this dialogue, the dialogue of Torah and Tefillah. And with the Beis HaMikdash gone, we are crippled also in those two elements of the dialogue, where he speaks to us and we speak to him. That's what we've lost in general terms. But now we have to meditate what remains. What of it remains so that we can be sensitive to it and grasp onto it and develop it so that it can be the seeds of redemption. In Slichus, we say, Rak ein shiur haTorah hazos. The only thing that's left is Torah. Talking there about the Chorbanim that we have gone through, the terrible destructions. The Torah is something which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. This is a crucial idea. Matan Torah. He gave it to us. It's really astonishing. The Torah is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blueprint for the creation. It's his, so to speak, translating as best we can into our terms, kevyochol, his mental plan for the universe. Its basic structure, its dynamics, its laws, its miracles, the whole of its history, including the future, it's all there in the Torah. Is it possible, conceivable, that the plan of the Creator, the infinite Creator, should be given over to a creature, a mere creature? Wouldn't that mean an infinite loss? Whatever the Torah can mean to us, it can't mean anything against the infinity of meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to it. When we understand the giving of the Torah as a gift, we have to understand that it's giving over to us that infinity to a finite kli, to a finite vessel. Chazal say in the Tikkuni Zohar that the first word of the Aseres HaDibros is a notarikon. It's a, every letter stands for a word. Anochi. Ana nafshi. Ksivis v'yohovis. Yohovis. I wrote my soul into the Torah, kivyochol, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I gave it. I wrote my soul into the Torah and gave it. And that gift is irrevocable. That gift never stops. that gift we have with us. Yes, a special connection, a special influence, a special energy of Torah came into the world through the Sanhedrin, sitting in the Lishkas HaKozis. And without it, yes, without it, we cannot take the responsibility for trying capital crimes. But the kiviyachol, this nefesh that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into the Torah, is still there. It's still there for us. And when a person learns Torah, part of what he should think is, this is a remnant of the Beis HaMikdash. I'm holding on to a sliver of the Beis HaMikdash. This part is still left. It's still with us. And when I learn it, I'm building it. I'm watering it. I'm flowering it. So that it should be part of what we use to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And the same thing is true with tefillah, with prayer. Yes, prayer has channels. And sometimes the channels are clouded. And sometimes some of the channels are stopped. We didn't say Tiskabel in the final Kaddish this morning in Shachris. Because of the Pasuk in Eicha, Sosam Tfilosi, Kodesh Baruch Hu stopped my prayer. But we did daven. We did daven. We didn't cancel prayer. So even when a Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Sosam Tfilosi, the Navi says, a Kodesh Baruch Hu stopped my prayer, we still daven. Because there are always other gates, there are always other channels. Shari, Demos, Lonish Lobos. Gates of tears are never closed. Kadosh Baruch Hu never turns his back ultimately on the Jewish people or even on an individual Jew, but certainly for the Jewish people. And therefore in tefillah, even though at the end of every tefillah we ask for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, even on Shabbos, even on Yom Tov, because we know that the tefillah is only a fraction. It's only a fraction. It should have been integrated together with the Korbanos into a glorious, fulfilling entity. And we only have a fraction. Still, it is tefillah. Still, the Kodesh Baruch Hu hears it. And we shouldn't wait for the Hiratzon at the end to think, oh yes, and the Beis Mikdash is missing. When we daven, we should think, this is my piece of what's left. And that's part of why the Mechaber and the Shulchan Aruch changes the word in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Tfilos keneged korbanos tiknum, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu establishes Tfilos corresponding to the korbanos. In Shulchan Aruch it's written bimkom, in place of. It's in place of now because that's all we have left. But a person should think, this is what I have left of what used to be of the korbanos, and think that I'm holding on to that sliver that's left. It's still alive for me. And I want to make it stronger so that it can result ultimately in the redemption. And Limud HaTorah also, together with Tefillah, stands in place of the Korbanos. We know that anyone who studies the laws of Korbanos, it's as if he offered that Korban. Now, don't make a mistake. The as if here means only until the Beis HaMikdash is built. A person does something that requires a sacrifice, an offering. And he studies the parsha. And that day, the Beis HaMikdash rebuilt, he still has to bring the animal offering to the temple. Studying does not relieve him of the responsibility. But when we don't have the capacity to fulfill it in practice the way it should be, so this is the sliver that's left behind for us. And Gemara tells us, there's that little bit left behind. And when you learn that piece of say, Ezehu Makomon in the morning, which it is a mitzvah to say, says so in the Shulchan Aruch, Mevin Yovin. When you say it, part of what you should feel is, we have this left. Kodesh Baruch Hu left us a little bit, but what we can do, so that it's not entirely lost. There's a deeper perspective. Again, Rabbi Breitwood spoke about this at the end of his shiur when he mentioned the Chasam Sofer. And I want to share with you a pre-tzadik who also asked the same question. Anyone who mourns for Yerushalayim merits and sees its joy. Now, Prisarik asked the question slightly differently. We've had, in his day, 1,800 years. 1,800 years. Were they not tzaddikim, great people, that really fulfilled Mes'abel al Yerushalayim? They mourned for Yerushalayim? How can Chazal tell us that they actually saw the joy of it when they didn't see it? The Pritzadik's explanation is in the same direction as the Chasam Sofer, but a little different. He quotes the famous Gemara at the end of Makos. Rabbi Akiva and three of his friends came to Yerushalayim. They saw the destruction, and they all four tore their clothes. Some people missed this. They all four tore their clothes. But then three cried, and Rabbi Akiva laughed. So they said to him, Akiva, why are you laughing? And he said, why are you crying? And they said, we see the Holy of Holies, and there's a fox strolling in the Holy of Holies. We shouldn't cry. And he said, I know two prophecies. A prophecy of destruction and a prophecy of rebuilding and redemption. And now that I see that the prophecy of destruction came true, I know I'm guaranteed that the prophecy of rebuilding will come true. That's what the Gemara says. But the Prisadik asks, how is Rabbi Akiva answering their question? Their question is, why are you laughing now? Okay, you saw one prophecy come true. Somehow that gives you confidence the other prophecy will come true. It will come true. Why is that reason to laugh now? Says the Prisadik, because you can see and experience the rebuilding even now. We don't have to wait until it happens when the Mashiach comes. There is an aspect now, not left over from the past, but a presage of the future. There's an aspect of that future that's alive even today. And that's what Rabbi Akiva said, I see it now. And he brought a beautiful proof for this. When Tisha B'Av comes out on Shabbos, we carry out all the halachas of Shabbos, except the Baruch Shabbat Sina. But we carry out all the halachas of Shabbos. And when it comes to Shalash Shudas, the Shulchan Aruch writes the following words, Mala al Shulchano keshlomo hamelech b'shato. You can have on your table, at Shalash Shudas, Shalash Shudas on Tisha B'Av. Like Solomon, King Solomon in his time, the time of his power, the time of his wealth, the time of his glory, Shalash Shudas can be a banquet. So the Prisadik asks, why? Why would there be such poetry in the Shulchan Aruch? And why would the expression be so extravagant? Okay, you might have thought that because it's Tisha B'Av, you should limit Shabbos in some way. No, don't limit it. Don't limit it. Treat it like every other Shabbos. But no, put on your table like Solomon is the time of his power and glory. Says the Prisadik, because Tisha B'Av carries within it the seeds of redemption even now. Only, it's a day that's dedicated to mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. So we usually don't express that. But when it comes out on Shabbos, that's when this element of Tisha B'Av expresses itself. And it's because it's Tisha B'Av that on that Shabbos, you have an extravagant Shalash Shudas. Because you're expressing the element of Geula, of redemption, that's in the Tisha B'Av itself. And Chazal tell us that the Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av. What more dramatic picture can you have than the Mashiach is being born now when we're mourning for the destruction? And this element is extremely important to me personally because I'm in Ovel today for my father, Olav Shalom, who died on Tisha B'Av on Shabbos. And this shir is Lili Nishmoso, Moshe Avram ben Shmuel, Zichrono Livracha. So, not only can we hold on to the slivers of the past that are still with us, but we can have a sensitivity to the future that's rooted in this day. Now, this is a theme in all of the Torah, that light only comes from darkness. Leis nahora elamigo chashucha, says the Zohar. Light only comes from darkness. It's a pattern from the beginning. V'choshech al pnei sahom, before light was created, the second pasuk in Bereishis tells us that there was darkness on the face of the deep. Vayomer Elokim yihor, and Hashem said, let there be light, and there was light. Only light after darkness. Light into a context of darkness. Ultimately, the reason is, darkness really means Hester Panim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu hides his face. And he hides his face for us to be able to create on our own. We should make the tikkun, the ultimate perfection of the world, because we're partners in the process of creation. So he has to hide to give us room. Give us room to operate. And when we do that, then the light can shine. The last verse in Eicha, next to last, Ashivenu Hashem Elecha v'nashuvu chadesh yimenu kekedem. This idea I'm going to conclude. Bring us back to you, Hashem, and we shall return. Restore our days as of old. Every pasuk has infinite depth, but here, the fact that it's deep is on the surface. Let's start with the end. Renew our days. Make our days new, not renew. That's an artifact of the English. Chadesh means to make new. Make our days new, kekedem, like they were before. If they're going to be like they were before, then they're not new. How are they new? How can it be new like it was? The answer is, we used to be in a condition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. And now we have to create that condition for ourselves. So it's the same condition, but its history is different. In the one case, he made it. In the other case, we made it. What is that condition? Closeness, connection, attachment. The neshama, the soul, before it comes into this world, enjoys a direct attachment with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. A soul that comes into this world, like the Mesillas Yesharim says, is going into Golus. The worst exile that there could be. Separated from the Creator by a material world which envelops it. That attachment is something that we re-achieve. We re-achieve it by our own actions. And then it's make our days new as they were once upon a time. And the same thing is true with the Beis HaMikdash. It's rebuilding, not building. And when they built the Beis HaMikdash, it was a continuation of what they had in the Mishkan. And the Mishkan was re-enacting what they had in Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden, where Kadosh Baruch was mishalech b'nehem. They could hear his presence strolling in the Gan with them. Derek Nevuah. It's all a question of getting back to that connection that HaKadosh Baruch Hu originally gave us. Now the Medrash in Eicha brings up a famous contradiction. In this verse we say, Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha v'nashuva, you bring us back and we will return. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Jewish people, that's what you want? I want something else. Shuvu Elai v'ashuva Aleichem. You return to me and I'll come back to you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want you to start. We say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we want you to start. Who should start? Who has to reach out first? But if you think about it, even when we say, Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha v'nashuva, bring us back and we'll return, our request that He should bring us back is our reaching out. It is our reaching out. And that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. He wants us to know what we've lost. He wants us to know how distant we are. And He wants us to know that if we ask, He'll take us back. Because although we are distanced, we're not lost. Although we're distanced, we're not cut off. The cord of connection, Yaakov, Chevel Nachloso, the cord of connection still exists. And if we pull on our side, on the cord. A Kodesh Baruch Hu will respond from his side. Kodesh Baruch Hu should give us the strength to hold on to what we have, within the pain of the loss, not to give in to despair, to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his everlasting mercy for us, left us a remnant, a remainder, and that if we hold on to it, we nurture it, we invest in it, that remnant can grow into the ultimate Gula.